Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. When you're in prison, you got a lot of time on your hands. A lot of inmates spend this time exercising. With little or no equipment and sometimes just the space available in their cells, prisoners are able to get incredibly big and strong. Learning how prisoners do these bodyweight workouts can be useful for those who aren't in jail, but want to get fit and don't have access to exercise equipment. My guest today got the lowdown on the methods prisoners use to get strong by interviewing bodybuilders who also spent time in the slammer. His name is Josh Bryant. He's a powerlifter and powerlifting coach and the co-author of the book Jailhouse Strong. We begin our conversation discussing the mindset with which Josh approaches fitness training, including what he means by being gas station ready. We then discuss why being big and strong is oftentimes a matter of survival for prisoners and some of the famously fit former inmates Josh highlights in his book. We then dig into specific body weight movements prisoners typically use, how they can be incorporated in your own workout routine, and the various ways you can modify and make the exercises harder. We discuss programs prisoners often use and how Josh has enhanced them with his powerlifting background. Josh then lays out a beginner's 3-day-a-week body weight program, explains the way prisoners incorporate deloading or taking a break from their workouts, and then he talks about his all-time favorite conditioning exercise. After the show's over, check out our show notes at aom.is/jailhousestrong. All right, Josh Bryant, welcome to the show.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you, Brett.
So you are a powerlifter, powerlifting coach, and the author of several books, including the one we're going to talk about today, Jailhouse Strong. But before we do that, let's talk about a bit about your career and background. So tell us a bit about your career as a lifter yourself and also your career as a coach of lifters.
Sure. So I started off in more traditional regular sports, but I found my true love training for those sports in the weight room. And I became the youngest person to bench press 600 pounds at 22 years old. Since then, I've had one of my students actually go on to beat that, which was really cool. In 2005, I won Atlanta's Strongest Man in America. And then I did some bodybuilding. I didn't actually compete in bodybuilding. I did a lot of training at bodybuilding at the world famous Metroflex gym in Arlington, Texas. So it was really cool. Since then, I kind of moved all around the country to train with different people that were kind of like the strongest people in the world. And since then, I've gone to train athletes and some of the strongest, most muscular people in the world. I have all kinds of clients at a very high level. And I've gotten into lately more kind of tactical training. So while I'm not in the military or law enforcement myself, that's how I enjoy training. And I've gone on to obviously coach people in person. I have a successful online training business and I do seminars all around the world. Obviously, that's kind of at a halt right now. But recently been to India, China, and Australia, and I've written some personal training courses for ISSA, write books, and that's where we're at right now.
So you said tactical training. What does tactical training look like?
So tactical training, I think, could be almost like you could almost swap out the word functional training. It's kind of being ready for any sort of situation. Almost what we talk about, sort of gas station ready type training, is tactical training.
Well, so let's talk about gas station. So I follow you on Instagram and for a while now, and one thing you see on your post, you always have this hashtag gas station ready. What do you mean by gas station ready?
Gas station ready started off as my business partner and co-author, Dom Mancia, teaches jiu-jitsu, and he made a joke one time about it being like sort of a scenario at a gas station at 3 a.m. So I'm like, okay, you know, I'm like, let's make this into a hashtag because that kind of explains what people want. It's 3 a.m., you pull up to a gas station, you know, some degenerate, wild-eyed, bourbon-bathed dude comes up and wants your car, you know, wants your lady, your wallet, whatever. Are you ready to handle the situation? So a gas station ready is like a mindset, a training philosophy, essentially to be ready for anything. That's what tactical training is. You have to sprint fast enough to handle a situation. You have to be able to handle yourself. You have to have the strength, the endurance, all that different kind of stuff. So gas station ready is being ready for anything. It's a mindset when conflict is inevitable, strike first and protect what's yours. And that doesn't have to be just in a self-defense, just how you handle life.
So it sounds like your philosophy towards strength isn't just to be strong to be strong, right? To show it on the platform, but it's that you want to be strong also so it transfers over to real life.
Absolutely. So, I mean, obviously if you're going to be like a lot of people I train, like the guy I've been working with just broke the world record for about the 10th time in the bench press. So someone training at that level, you have to make some of those sacrifices. You know what I mean? Because that you're training, you know, when you're pursuing excellence to that degree, you're going to have to get rid of some stuff in the process. But for most people, and even people like that at that level, I'm going to, like, so for powerlifting purposes, I'm going to have a lot more work capacity stuff and movement capacity and strongman type of training in their off season. So absolutely, even for the most extreme powerlifter, there, I would have more of this type of training than most people that are into powerlifting, for sure.
And one thing I've noticed with the content you've put out, especially on your Instagram account, is that you're often, you're throwing back to the past. You're looking at bodybuilders, strongmen from the past and showing what they did. Like, what do you think those guys got right that a lot of people have forgotten today when it comes to training?
I think one huge thing is they stuck to the basics. So basics, you know, that doesn't mean elementary. It means fundamental. So I think that's where a lot of people get it wrong. And I think the work ethic back then, I mean, you had a couple of weeks ago, the Garage Gym Review guy, and that was a great piece, sort of that kind of mentality of making the most of what you have in your current situation and the work ethic.
All right. So this I think that leads nicely to the topic of conversation, which is your book, Jailhouse Strong. So these are—
Absolutely.
So what led you down? So this is a book about the strength and conditioning routines of people in prison, dudes in prison. What led you down that path to explore how prisoners get strong?
Sure. So growing up, trained at the YMCA, and at 16 years old, I was actually a manager of a hardcore gym. It was called Santa Barbara Gym Fitness because I moved out to Texas later. So I was in Santa Barbara, California. So there would be all these really big, huge, strong guys. You know, one of the main ones is a guy named Fed. He was a bouncer at the local strip club, and he had been in prison and all this stuff. And he was so strong and trained so hard, and he was so big. And we noticed a lot of these guys were really big and really strong, were training really hard, really basic. And even the ones that were more of bodybuilder types did a lot of bodyweight training. So like, you know, someone like of this size, you know, 250 pounds, very lean, wasn't only doing pushups to get that big. However, if he did a chest workout, he finished off with some nasty bodyweight kind of finishers. So we know, you know, obviously just observing how strong, how functional these guys were, even being young, 16 years old, how well they aged. You know, you see some of these bodybuilders would come in there when I'm working at 16 years old, talking about getting old. They're 30 years old. You got guys in their mid 40s that could move like pro athletes because they trained this way. In prison, they did more movement type of stuff. So philosophically, it also came down to, I think, in prison's a low point for a lot of people, obviously, as it should be. It shouldn't be the highlight of anybody's life. It shouldn't be something to be glorified. So what happens is they all this time on their hands. So a lot of people just kind of wish away their time. And I think that is essentially shortening their life. And the ones that are smart, they use time as a resource. So what they do is in the situation they are, they maximize what they have, you know, more time to recover, more time to train, all that different stuff. So that kind of philosophy, you know, and then nothing to do with jail at all, just how you can train at home. You know, you can get rid of that commute to the gym. I have a family, so I don't want to waste— I'm not training to set a world record in powerlifting at this point. So I can set an example of physical training at the house by training at home doing these type of workouts. And then for other people, it just cultivates a higher probability of success. It's, if something's going on at your house, there's less excuses to miss the workout or whatever else. And then you can even set your training area up, whether it's like, you know, a living room in your apartment or like your garage gym or whatever. You can set it up exactly how you like it, you know, like certain posters, lighting a certain way, all that kind of stuff. The next part would be, you know, what's the next best thing you can do? Like, I had a freshman football coach always talk about what's the next best thing we can do. And that's exactly what we want to do. We may not have access to all the best equipment, but what's the next best thing we can do? Then philosophically, looking at self-imprisonment, it exists in many different forms. It could be a job, whatever it is. Physical training for people behind bars has served for a way to them sort of like, I guess, free themselves from that sort of imprisonment. And that's what we want to do. That's why we post so much stuff and have books about mindset, because that's huge. And in the process, which wasn't the original goal, just to kind of put out some books and stuff, what's been cool is we, Dom and I, have been able to establish a community of like-minded people online and stuff, and met all these cool people, met people in person and all that stuff. So these workouts, they can be done anywhere. They can be done in a, you know, in a jail cell, basement, hotel room. They're functional. They're going to have your body ready for anything, and they can all be done with minimal equipment. And oftentimes, all you need is going to be your body weight. And last but not least, they're a lot of fun.
Right. And in the book, you know, you talk about, you know, one of the reasons, like, these, why a lot of times prisoners get big and strong, like you said, time. It's the only thing they got. So it's like, you know, getting that exercise time, they look forward to it.
Sure.
But also, like, it's for survival. Like, they need to be big and strong to be, I guess you can say, jail yard ready. Cause that, they can get, if you look weak, you're going to get picked on.
Well, sort of funny, you know, talk about gas station ready. You know, someone at the seminar you said in Australia was asking about self-defense. I said, look, I mean, 99% of situations can be just diffused by not being at bad places. You know, if you avoid bad places, that's going to take care of most of them. But honestly, a lot of situations can be diffused just by a certain look. That's huge. You know, because then you got to think of, like, prisoners have higher testosterone levels. I'm not a sociologist or anything. I don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg. I don't know if it even matters if they're in prison because they have higher testosterone levels and kind of leads to, I guess, some choices that would get you there. Or if it's a product of the environment, you know, if you're resolving petty grievances with brutal beatdowns and knifings, that's going to be very tough for the average man to survive. But an alpha male is going to thrive in that environment. So that would be part of it. You know, exercise consistency, the body thrives on routine. So with all this time on your hand, if you're disciplined, you can be very consistent in your routine. If you have a routine, you're going to active progression. So you hear stories about people doing, you know, 1500 pushups a day and all this kind of stuff. Cause most of the state penitentiaries banned weights in 1992. Some of the federal ones still have them, but they won't buy new ones. So they in there are going to take care of the stuff, but most people don't have access to it. So you hear stuff about, you know, people doing 1500 pushups a day. They didn't come in there doing that. So there's an active model of progressive overload there. Interval training. They're confined to these small spaces. So that's going to, you know, the traditional modes of long, slow cardio are not going to apply, because even like a small exercise yard, you know, it's not that much room. But if you're in a jail cell, you could do burpees till the cow come home. You know, these would sort of serve as like a think tanker, like Napoleon Hill talked about, like a mastermind group, you know, people with similar goals that you can trade ideas with to help you in your pursuit. And I think that's huge to bounce people off. There's no agenda here, except to get better.
So in the book, you and your co-author actually interview some famously fit prisoners. Who are some of these guys that you interviewed for this book?
Okay, so I'll give you three good ones. Dorian Yates.
Right.
So he was, you know, the Mr. Olympia and a lot of, so why that would apply, you're thinking, okay, bodybuilder, great. You know, what that applies to is Dorian Yates actually started off in jail and kind of turned him around, but his base was built with bodyweight training, heavy barbell lifts and like rope climbs and things like that. Corey Matthews, another IFBB pro bodybuilder, he actually went to prison at 14 years old in Nevada, was in a grown-up prison, and he went on, turned his life around. Now he's like a pastor and a professional bodybuilder. And Gary Frank was a world record-setting powerlifting holder, but not so much for anything he did. He never went to jail or anything, but he was actually the athletic director at a prison called Angola in Louisiana. So he had a ton of observations and things we can share. Then a lot of different people that, you know, like I mentioned that guy earlier, fed him, you know, different guards, different, a lot of people that aren't famous, but those would be like three famous ones you guys might know. And then also talk to Jeff Thompson. You guys ever interviewed him? He's a bouncer from over in England.
No.
He's written some best-selling books and, you know, so for some of the unarmed combat stuff, because a lot of the interval training is unarmed combat training. So, you know, instead of just doing like, you know, a regular high intensity interval training, it might be like something like an elbow, knee, sprawl, repeat, 20 seconds on Tabata type of thing.
So let's talk about some of the programming that you highlight in this book and the exercises. So you mentioned for a while, prisoners had access to weights, but they started taking that stuff out during the 90s. I guess that's when that whole super criminal thing was going on. They're afraid
that's exactly the term. Yep.
Right. they were afraid that people would go to prison, they'd come out and they'd be even worse. And it's probably because they were lifting weights. So they took it out. And so a lot of prisoners use body weight exercises. What are some of the main body weight exercises you talk about in Jailhouse Strong that normal folks who just don't have access to exercise equipment can do to get a good workout?
Okay, so the foundational ones would be like push-ups, then different variations of the push-ups. So it's kind of the nucleus, pull-ups and different variations of the pull-ups, different variations of the squat, then burpee variations. So then we would go into more advanced variations. So like you could, you know, a push-up could become push-ups with your feet up on a bench, or, you know, a Hindu push-up, or even in an extreme case, a one-arm push-up, that kind of stuff. So, and then obviously we have for the flip side, because there's a lot of people that talk about every program should begin with some sort of bodyweight type of programming. But, you know, in a country where a third of the people or whatever or more are obese, that's not necessarily going to be a practical thing. Or a powerlifter that weighs 400 pounds might be strong, but never done any kind of bodyweight training. You know, you can't just say, all right, we're going to bust out, you know, 10 sets of 25 pushups. You have to start off with something like the knee pushups on the knees, push up against the wall and progress up from there.
So you mentioned, okay, those are the main ones, like the pushups, pull-ups, squats. And then you mentioned there's variations. And I guess all those different variations, that's how you increase intensity for bodyweight exercises?
Absolutely. You know, you can, there's all sorts of things. That's how you can do, you go unilateral. I mean, you can add different tempos where you accentuate the negative, accelerate the positive. Like, you know, in powerlifting, we talk about compensatory acceleration training where you're putting maximum force, full range of motion into that. You can do the same concept with a bodyweight training. I mean, you can make it like a plyometric bodyweight, you know, all sorts of different stuff. I mean, you just think about it. Even if you're doing a lunge, if you put your hands above your head, it's going to be harder than if you put them by your side.
Yeah, I know that. My coach has been programming lunges at the end.
Awesome.
And he wants, like, on the head. As soon as I put my hands on the head, I'm like, this sucks. I don't want to do this anymore. So, okay, you mentioned like so different types of push-ups, like the explosive one, like a plyometric. Is that like a clapping push-up type thing?
You can do that, or you can just go straight up in the air. We get like basically push-up instead of stopping and locking out the top, become airborne, get as high as you can.
And a Hindu push-up, what's that?
Hindu push-ups, like I think I've heard people call them a bomber push-up before. You know, you start with your feet wider, butt up in the air, and you kind of come down to, you know, almost like scrape your chest against the ground, come back up, and then you almost get like in a bridging sort of position up, and then, you know, come back in a circular motion. It's very like a rhythm type of deal to it. And those got popularized from a guy named Matt Fury. And before that, they were like a mainstay in the programming of a famous wrestler named the Great Gama from India. Have you ever heard of him before?
I have heard the great Gama, yeah.
Yep, and that's kind of the guy that used him. And he, you know, he's something like, you know, 5'9", 255 pounds with a 58-inch chest, you know, 80 years ago or something. And apparently Bruce Lee used a lot of the teachings of the Great Gama, which I did not know till more recently.
So yeah, I've done the dive bomber, the Hindu pushup, and it works different parts of your upper body and different in the mm-hmm. different parts of the movement. I mean, I feel like it's very shoulder, and then there's like when you get to a certain part, it turns into your triceps, and then into your chest. It's a really dynamic movement. And I like it. It's a fun pushup to do.
Do you feel them in your upper? I feel a lot in my upper chest too, much more than a regular. You know, almost like, you know, incline versus bench pressing is where you can kind of feel those a little bit. And then you also feel them a lot in your upper back too, compared to a regular pushup.
No, for sure. And then, I mean, another way you talk about how prisoners add intensity is, you know, one with pushups at least, is you put your feet up on the bed or a stool or whatever. And now you got like a decline pushup almost.
Absolutely. And, you know, another one people don't think of a lot of times is, I've already mentioned going unilateral, but just increasing range of motion. So if you're, you know, doing pushups, you go between, you know, if you have two boxes, you can stretch down a little bit deeper. You can pause the reps at the bottom of the movement. So all this different stuff you can do. And I know we're here talking about body weight training, but you can also, you know, there's different things you can add to yourself too. I mean, you might have some bands. There was one study that, you know, in the NSCA journal talking about people used band resisted pushups versus bench pressing, and their strength in bench pressing increased nearly as much as it did when doing band resisted pushups. So even for like powerlifting and stuff, I'll use that kind of stuff with my clients just to get them to do different type of movements. Absolutely.
What I like about these body move, because I do powerlifting. What I like about body weight exercises like a pushup or sure. a squat is that it's like, I feel like it's good for my joints. It just feels good for my tendons and my joint strength, because you get a range of motion that you typically don't get with a barbell.
Absolutely. And it just sort of hits the muscle a little bit different too. I mean, I do like a body weight squat. I feel, you know, more in my quads if I was going to take it to like a point of failure than I would, you know, with a barbell squat. I'm going to feel that a little more in the posterior chain. So absolutely.
We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. Texas Pete is the sauce that allows you to sauce like you mean it. Each Texas Pete sauce is packed with a bold, balanced flavor. The signature tanginess is what makes it a legendary hot sauce that can be used on just about anything. You're definitely going to want to try every flavor. The original hot sauce has a famous secret blend of fermented peppers. Their hotter hot sauce is 3 times hotter than the original, and it's not for the faint of heart. They also got a flavor called Sabor by Texas Pete, adds authentic Mexican flavor. And they also have a dust dry seasoning that matches the flavor of the original hot sauce in a flavorful dry rub. But the flavor that I've been enjoying lately is the chopped sriracha sauce. It's got chili, garlic, and some tropical tangy notes. It's really good. I love putting on my eggs. Texas Pete, sauce like you mean it. Visit TexasPete.com and use the store locator to find Texas Pete products as well as purchase sauces and get recipe inspiration. And you can use promo code PODCAST24 for 20% off at TexasPete.com. That's PODCAST24. For 20% off at TexasPete.com. Check out the Sriracha Cha Sauce. It's wedding season, and while weddings are all about the bride and groom, they're also a chance for you to look your best. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into wedding season looking like $1 million, even though suits start at just $499. It's easier than ever to be the best dressed with Indochino. Order your custom suits now and they'll be ready for wedding season. The process of customizing a suit on Indochino, very easy to do. It's also a lot of fun. I've talked about my navy blue suit I've gotten from Indochino. First off, you can decide how the jacket is, how you want the pockets on the jacket to be, how you want the lapels, the vent on the back, the lining on the pants. You can decide you want pleats or no pleats. I went no pleats on my pants on this one. And then you do the measuring process. You'll need someone to help you, but they have this very easy to follow guide. Send that all in a few weeks, you have a custom made-to-measure suit sent directly to your door, and you're going to pay about the same price for a suit that you'd pay for an off-the-rack suit at a department store. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code MANLINESS to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code MANLINESS. Check it out today. If you're like me, you've probably signed up for subscription services, but then you forgot about them. I'm talking about newsletters, streaming services, things like that. Well, with the personal finance app Rocket Money, it can help you find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions. It can also monitor your spending and help you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I had a chance to use Rocket Money, connected it to my checking account, and it found a bunch of subscription services that I forgot about. I was able to cancel them, and I was able to save a lot of money because the stuff adds up. Besides canceling your unwanted subscriptions, Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lower bills for you, up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/manliness. That's rocketmoney.com/manliness, rocketmoney.com/manliness. All right, picture that thing you've always wanted to learn. Now picture learning it from the person who's literally the best at it in the world. That's what you get with Masterclass. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors, and a lot of them are former AOM podcast guests. So for example, you can learn The Art of Negotiation from Chris Voss. We had him on the podcast. Leadership from Jocko Willink, another AOM podcast guest. Writing from Malcolm Gladwell, another AOM podcast guest. You name it, Masterclass has it. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. So I did the Masterclass with Chris Voss on negotiation. Very well done. He talks about tactical empathy, how to mirror somebody so that you can develop rapport with them. So if you enjoyed that podcast I did with Chris Voss several years ago about his book, Never Split the Difference, you're going to love this Masterclass. And right now, AOM listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/AOM. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/AOM. Masterclass.com/AOM. Check out the negotiation class with Chris Voss. And now back to the show. We talked about ways you can increase intensity on a push-up. And this is by this is basically the equivalent of adding weight to a body weight exercise, making it harder. Let's talk about pull-ups. So there's a typical pull-up, which is hard for a lot of people. Some people can't even do a pull-up or a chin-up. Right now is a great time to get up on that. But let's say you've mastered the pull-up. What are some things that prisoners have done to increase the intensity on pull-ups?
Well, the most obvious way is going to be to add some sort of resistance, be it, you know, another person, some sort of object, weights, whatever. And then another one is actually changing the move. You know, obviously you can go unilateral, one arm type of thing. Even if you grab your wrist or something like Rocky does, that's going to be harder than just doing a regular chin-up. And then another one like is a sternum pull-up. So that's sort of almost like a row. And it's like you're doing a pull-up, but you come up and like almost touch your sternum to the bar. That's what you shoot for. So you're kind of leaning back as you do that. So you get a lot of the feeling of it's almost like a hybrid between a horizontal and a vertical pull. And you feel it in a point, in a midpoint of your back, like you do a row. It's like nothing you've ever felt before.
And another movement pull-up variation that I've seen that it just works something differently. It's, I think it's called like a commando pull-up. It's like where you hold the bar like you're like crossing a rope commando style.
Absolutely.
And then you just pull yourself up and alternate shoulders, and that just, it hits different.
That's another. Yeah, absolutely. Commando pull-ups are great. Yeah.
And then on the squat, I mean, I guess the way you can add intensity to that, I mean, the ultimate way to add intensity to that would be like a pistol squat, like a one-legged squat.
And I think that's true with any kind of body weight stuff is when you go unilateral, that's going to obviously make it a lot tougher. So yeah, absolutely. And then I think another one is pause squats. Not that a lot of people are going to, you know, a lot of the stronger people are still able to deal that no problem, but that's, you know, another one. I think jump squats are a big one. So that's another big one. If you like a prison jump squat where you put your hands behind your head, land in a squat position and do those in like a rapid fire succession, that's a great way to increase intensity there.
No. Yeah. One thing that I've done this, I remember this when I was in like elementary school, I read some book on like how to be a ninja or like a Shaolin monk or whatever.
Yeah.
And one of the exercises they talked about was they'd have the monks like in a half squat position, like a ready fight position, and you just hold it for as long as you can. And I remember like in my bedroom when I was 11 years old doing that until I basically just all the lactic acid built up. I must have done something for me. But that's one way you can add intensity. You just hold a position for a long time.
Sure. And have you ever done things like sissy squats and stuff like that, or Hindu squats?
I have not. What are those? Okay. So
Hindu squats is similar to like a Hindu, you know, it's, I guess, similar, but you want to get a rhythm going like a Hindu pushup. You kind of like swing your arms over your head and then you let your air out as you go down. Sort of like the, you know, obviously when you're squatting heavy weight, you don't want to let your air out or it's going to crush you. But here you let it out to kind of let yourself get really deep in a circular motion. And you come up on your toes as you go down. Again, something you wouldn't do with weight on your back. And that was another big one. If you go on that line, just Google a picture of the Great Gama. There's some cool pictures of him doing Hindu squats. You can see that bottom position I'm talking about. So, you know, if you have knee problems or something, this could be an issue. But for like high reps in circuits and stuff, I mean, it's going to really, you know, burn your quads like crazy. And then a sissy squat's kind of similar to that type of movement, but you're not doing, you hold on to something and you get up on your toes and really let your knees travel forward and get a huge stretch in your quad. It wouldn't be something you'd load up with a bunch of weight.
One that came to my mind that you could possibly do too in a confined space like prison is like a Bulgarian split squat, right? Just put your foot up on a bed and then just squat, right?
And that would sort of lend to the point we made earlier about going unilateral. That would be like an easier way of going unilateral rather than, you know, having to do a full out pistol squat.
And the way you can make these harder too, even if like for a squat, is put something in your body, hold something, could be
sure,
a rock, a chair, a kid, I don't know, and do the movement, and you can add some weight that way.
That's how I used to put my son to sleep when he was about a year and a half. I'd just start doing squats with him and he'd be asleep in about 30 seconds, just hold him like a Zercher squat.
How old's your son now?
I have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Yeah, have you tried that on him lately? Just pick him up and grab.
No, last night I want to go to sleep, and because, you know, our sleeping schedule is a little off right now because I just did the seminar in Australia right before, you know, all hell broke loose with what's going on right now. So we got back like early, and then so what I did is I took my family over with me. We did like a vacation for a week, then I did a seminar for 3 days, and then we got back, school's canceled, so no one's, you know, sleeping's been, you know, because the Australian trip, I guess, is an excuse a few weeks ago now, but I guess we hadn't really got on a normal routine as much as we would just because of everything that's been going on. Last night, they're in there just telling me to make them do different kinds of burpees. So
tire them out. Yeah. All right. So we've talked about the basic movements you can do, push-ups, pull-ups, squats, and then the variations you can do to make those a bit harder. But let's talk about programming body weight exercise, particularly how prisoners have done it. So when you've talked to these guys, what are some typical body weight programming you're seeing in prisons? And then also let's talk about what your powerlifting experience, what insights you've brought to that on programming body weight exercises.
Sure. So I think smart prisoners are avoiding like some of the, you know, common mistakes. So some of the common mistakes I think are, you know, just people getting, you know, so in endurance happy. They just make this endo, like they view body weight training. Well, I guess, you know, some people just avoid it altogether, but a lot of people view it as just totally for endurance when with the right application, it can be used for strength and explosive power, even for people with, you know, high relative strength. That's your strength to body weight ratio. So keeping that in mind, some of the things I've seen, it's going to vary a lot. I've seen just how in strength training, you see somebody using something where they're squatting a couple times a week. And then you have some Bulgarian type of methodology where they're squatting, you know, twice a day and they're both getting good results. So there is variation there. But, you know, the most successful programs I've seen have come up with a few different things. I've seen people that are basically structuring around their workouts around a desired training effect. So they might be focusing on one workout on explosive strength, one workout on strength, one workout on endurance, you know, that type of thing. So almost like an undulated periodization model where each workout's going to have a purpose. Another thing I've seen very successfully used is people using the total repetition method. So that what all that means is, for instance, if somebody sets out like they're going to, you know, do a pull-up workout, they say they're going to do 100 pull-ups. The way they get to 100 pull-ups is they do as many reps as possible, you know, say rest 30 seconds, for example, and repeat that sequence until they reach 100 reps. So that could be, you could do this for 10 reps, you could do it for 1,000, it doesn't matter, but that's kind of the methodology right there, the total repetition method. Obviously, if you're like your straight sets, that, and that's just, you know, 10 sets of 10, whatever. But then another one we've seen and we brought to the forefront here was the Juarez Valley method. And I saw you had written an article and mentioned that in one of your articles too.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't know what that is. So what that is let's just say a Juarez Valley 10. The object of this workout is to keep the intensity steady. So what you do is like, say you start off with 10 pull-ups. You do, you know, this would be really hard, but you do 10 pull-ups. You would walk 8 feet away, walk 8 feet back. Then you do one. You do the same walk again. Then you go 9. Same walk again, you go 2. You basically go back and forth, 8, then 3, 7, 4, you know, 6 and 5 until every number between 1 and 10 is covered. You could do that for 20. You could do that for whatever, 15, doesn't matter. But that's the idea. The deck of pain. This is most popular for push-ups. You basically flip a card over and you have a deck of cards. You flip a card over and you do however many push-ups or whatever movement you want to do that's on that card. And then you have the what I call the mountain method. It's based off of what Chuck Sipes used to do. He used to have a thing called the 1-10-1. Have you ever heard of that before?
I have not.
Okay, so what Chuck Sipes would do is he's a famous bodybuilder, kind of like old school, you know, heyday, early 60s type of guy. And what he would do is he would pick he would go really heavy, but he'd also do like pump training. When he did the pump training, what he would do is he'd go 1 rep, 2 rep, 3, 4, all the way up to 10 like that. Then he'd go back down 10, you know, 9, 8, 7, 6, all the way down to 1. But he'd only take 10 seconds between sets. And you can do this for like a more of a muscle endurance or hypertrophy type of training with body weight. And the Tyson squat workout's another popular one. Time under tension training, simply just doing sets for a prescribed amount of time, you know. Instead of saying I'm going to do 15 reps, you just do push-ups, pull-ups, whatever, squats with perfect form for 30 seconds. You know, cluster sets where you do, you know, you focus on doing more sets, less reps, but you do a ton of sets. And then other ones that are, we call limited yard time circuits. So you go like 20 minutes, you would do push-ups for 30 seconds, rest 30 seconds, do squats for 30 seconds, rest 30 seconds, and do a variety of different body weight type of training exercises.
Yeah, that last one, that's kind of how my conditioning is at the end of a you know, barbell session, is that it's okay, there's 3 different body weight movements you're going to do, mm-hmm. 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. So it's almost kind of like a CrossFit WOD.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it sounds like you're in a good program because I like what I'm hearing from you. So yeah, absolutely. That's a great way to do it.
And that cluster set. So I just learned about this because I was listening to an interview where you're talking about this concept. So that'd be instead of doing, you know, 2 sets of 10, you would do 10 sets of 2.
That's how I always, it's funny, I always said at a seminar, I go, there's no working definition of cluster sets. I use that exact example you give because I don't know, maybe there is, no one's corrected me yet and said, well, actually there is a definition now. It's basically that, more sets, less reps.
And that'd be good for pull-ups. So someone who can't do a lot of pull-ups, that'd be a great way to get more pull-ups into a session. Say if you only do two, well, instead of trying to like do 10 in a set, do 10 sets of two.
Yeah, it's a way, it's a better way also for the, you know, for building explosive strength there. You can produce more force that way, and it's better for the acquisition of skill if you're trying to actually master a movement, grease the groove, if you will, then the cluster sets are more effective. And that's something I've definitely picked up, because I feel like you asked earlier about, you know, the powerlifting influence. I don't think I did a very good job of answering that. I kind of like skipped over because I started talking about other things, but that would be where this would apply, is that cluster sets is huge. I didn't even have a name for it when I first started working with people. I just knew that powerlifting, we're a one rep sport. We need more first reps to practice technique. But this is going to, you know, this is going to be a better way to master technique and pull-ups or whatever. And then the other influence of powerlifting there would be, you know, progressive overload, of course.
So progressive overload, for those who don't know, just means you're making your workout harder. So how do you implement progressive overload in bodyweight workouts?
I think this is a big mistake people make. So most people are just going to add reps, which obviously adding reps is a great way. But, you know, and if you're, you know, so if you heard in bodybuilding, people use the term cheating, like, you know, yes. Okay. So cheating.
But maybe explain that for our listeners who aren't familiar with it.
So cheating would be, let's envision yourself doing a set of curls. Okay. The set of curls becomes too difficult to complete with perfect form. So what you do is you add a little, you add a little hip bump to get a little swing. And if you're doing it correctly, you would use just enough to get past your sticking point, which means where you'd normally be stuck at, and go right past there. Okay. That's how most people get cheating. The other way to do cheating is like when I'm doing hypertrophy training for people, is like what I call variable range of motion. So let's say, for example, somebody's doing, you know, time under tension training, do an incline dumbbell press for 30 seconds. When they no longer complete full reps, they would go to partial reps. So it's a variable range of motion. And that's what you got to be careful on when you are, which is good for that type of training, but, you know, because you're just going for a period of time. But if you're actually trying to execute reps, the wisdom I used to get in powerlifting was old school guys when I was like 13, 14 years old at the gym would say, if you squat, you know, if you every inch of depth you cheat, you're basically cheating yourself of 40 pounds, or it's making it 40 pounds easier. So if we go with that logic in here, if you start doing the body weight exercises and you keep decreasing with a variable range of motion, it's no longer the same lift. That's the problem with if you only look at that. So adding reps is awesome, but you have to make sure you're using the same reps if you're actually progressively overloading, you know, the movement. So then the other ways are the ones that we just talked about of, you know, eventually you would put your feet up on a push-up, or, you know, go unilateral on a squat, or whatever the case may be, is you would look at those parameters. You'd also look at adding reps. And then I think a huge one is decreasing rest intervals. So if we can get the same amount of work done in less time, we've progressively overloaded your training. It's just with a density factor, because you can keep doing more work if you drag these workouts out for, you know, 3 hours, but that's not what people are after. If we can get the same amount of work done in less time, we've increased density, hence overloaded the training. So there's tons of different ways we can overload it.
So you've talked about different programs that you've seen, the Juarez Valley method, the deck of pain, but let's say there's a person who's just starting out. They want just a basic body weight program that gets, it's a full body
sure.
program. Like, what would that look like for someone starting out with like the exercise and also the reps and sets you'd recommend?
Sure. So, okay. I get an example. So here'd be like a 3 day a week program. Okay. So you go full body 3 days a week. You would go say five sets of 10 to 20 reps on a push-up, five sets of 15 to 20 reps on a squat, a prison squat, then five sets of leg raises, and some planks would be one day. Another day, we'd have burpees. And what we do is start off with basically just like one or two reps, you know, walk away like a Juarez Valley, walk back and repeat that for 10 minutes. We would do some sort of unarmed combat drill. This is using the Jailhouse Strong stuff. So keep that in mind. If you're not into this stuff, you know, you could do something else, but some sort of unarmed combat interval drill next, walking lunges, then some inverted rows. And then on Friday, you know, we do some Hindu squats, chin-ups. And if somebody's unable to do chin-ups, we'd work with some variations that are, you know, easier to do. You could, you know, might even do inverted rows, there's all sorts of different ways. You can do band-assisted push-ups, all sorts of different, you know, even if you had a partner that could spot you, all sorts of different things we could do. And then some push-ups and then some jackknife sit-ups. So that would be a pretty, you know, beginner level, not somebody that's never done anything before, but someone kind of new to bodyweight training.
That sounds like it'd only take about 30 to 45 minutes to do.
Yeah, if you could get if you're not training right now, you have some sort of athletic background, I think 30 minutes three times a week, you can definitely change your physique, your health, and feel a lot better. Absolutely.
And how do you know when to start adding variables and start changing things up with your programming, like to add intensity or reps?
So if I, okay, so like if I'm working with somebody like one-on-one, I'm going to change it weekly. It could be very, very, very small changes though. Like, you know, but if that's not the case, you're just following one of these programs, it's going to, you know, in Jailhouse Strong on this particular program, it'd be every 3 weeks.
Gotcha. And do prisoners, have you found, do they ever fall like a deloading like scheme? So like they decided, okay, I've done three weeks of this, time for a deload, and then I'll work. Do they do things like that, or they just keep going up and adding progressive overload?
Well, they definitely do. So what they use is the same way, you know, I train a lot now too, is what I call these our natural deloads. So what that means is for them, it's like, you know, a lot of people say like, well, Arnold never deloaded. Well, yeah, he actually did. He's in his Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding. He talked about how he'd walk into the gym, not feel it a certain day and leave. That was his deload. I mean, he may not have had it planned out, but he said he did that. So a lot of people did deload without them knowing it. You know what I mean? Or like they felt off that day, they used lighter weight. It just wasn't planned. So what a lot of these guys do is like, that's what they're going to do, is they're not feeling it, that they don't feel it, they kill it type of deal. That's what I personally do now. So I'm going to like, you know, if we're taking a vacation every few months or something, or doing this or that, this is a perfect time for, you know, we're in Australia, go to the beach, and I take the kids to the beach in the morning and run some, not even sprints, more like tempo runs, like do some pushups, things like that. And it wasn't very structured. It wasn't very hard, but it was enough to keep me kind of like active recovery. So most of them are doing stuff like that. But in my programs, I definitely work those in. And then if I was working with someone individually, you know, and we got to that point and I knew that they could be trusted to make this kind of decision, I say, okay, just let me know when you need a natural deload because you're going to take a vacation or whatever. But definitely just for these kind of programs, we do them less often. So it might be instead of like, I would say the average in most programs with like barbells is, we say like every 4 weeks is a safe average.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. This would be more like every 8 weeks or so.
Okay. That makes sense. And I think also just that I like that idea of like, keep in mind how you fill in. Look, I mean, that's where some like rate of perceived effort might come in handy. It's like, if things are feeling like an eight or a nine when it should feel like a seven, maybe I just take a break today.
And that's what most of the prisoners, and we talk to them. We say, what do you ever do? They're like, what's that? And you tell them, like, no, if I just didn't feel it that day, I'd stop.
Right. So we've been talking about strength, and a lot of this stuff, the body weight can be used as conditioning, but in Jailhouse Strong, you talk about the burpee as being the go-to conditioning exercise for convicts. Like, what's so great about burpees?
Sure. So to lending your point right there on the strength though, and I think this is also important for the heavier people listening that are into barbell training and stuff. If right now, if you're training with mostly your body weight, you probably won't really notice much of a drop off if you're heavier. But anyways, Matt, back to the burpees. So burpees are awesome. So burpees, how they kind of came about and got popular?
No, tell me.
Okay. They were a conditioning test for World War II. And that doesn't mean it's going to help you if you're listening, but just a piece of history right there. I think they're very similar to, you know, any kind of like sprawling type of deal for unarmed combat scenario, for MMA type of stuff. They're very effective for interval training, and they also force your body to work together as an integrated unit. And there are like anything else, there are different ways to increase intensity. Here you can, you know, you can do an 8-count burpee, you can do push-ups. One of the guys was saying, even, and someone wrote me the other day, told me in one of the prisons in California, they would do it where they do a regular burpee with a push-up, jump up, do a knee, and then you take your fist and you hit yourself in if you do a right knee, you hit yourself on your left side with a hammer fist to your stomach. So, I mean, then you'd alternate sides. There's tons of different ways. So I think it's very good for like real world scenario. It's very good for interval training, and it forces your body to work together as an integrated unit. I did a bunch of them last night, just knowing we were going to talk about them today because I hadn't done any in a while. And, you know, I felt it feels really good.
No, and there, I think I've got bad memories of them from football, right? Like you just, as soon as the coach said, get your feet moving, you knew it was about to come.
Sure.
Yeah. Burpees. And so another thing that I've done before or done in the past with burpees to add intensity to it. So it's like burpee. And then when you jump up, you do a pull up and then burpee, pull up.
That's
pull up.
Hard. Yeah, for sure.
That's hard. That's not fun. But if you're glutton for punishment, that could work. And then another way you mentioned that you can do conditioning is the combatives training, sort of like shadow boxing type stuff.
Absolutely. And then you can even, you'd throw knees. It's almost like sort of like a leg raise or something. I mean, there's a ton of different ways. We can almost look at the burpee as like a Swiss Army knife. It may not be the best at one particular thing, but it's good at a lot of different things.
Now, speaking of shadow boxing, there's this guy here in Tulsa, this old guy who goes down by the Arkansas River on the trail, and there's like this statue of an eagle on the river, and he's this old gold guy, big white beard. He always has his shirts off, and at like 5 o'clock in the evening, he's always there shadow boxing and like just there. And I'm like, that guy's gas station ready.
Does he look pretty good doing it?
He does. I mean, he looks like I wouldn't want to mess with him.
Gotcha.
No. So he,
I mean, that's it right there.
He might've been in the clink and I just don't know it. And he's just nice where he picked that stuff up. So besides this stuff, have you noticed, do prisoners like focus on other like things besides the big movements because it's important to have in prison, or they just decided that's what they want to do? Like do they do like grip training or things like that?
Well, it's going to be a case by case basis. So absolutely some of them are getting it by default. One more thing I want to mention here about the burpee is if you guys haven't tried, another good one is burpee box jumps. If you've never tried that, we do a burpee and then you immediately jump up onto a box. So not to change subject, but want to get that in real quick. But yeah, definitely some do. And like, you know, so some of the things guys are doing are really innovative. So they might do, have you guys ever seen the videos of people doing curls with like trash bags full of water and stuff like that?
I have not seen that, but I'm gonna search for it now.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to grip the trash bag. So, you know, pull-ups, I mean, that's going to give you some grip work. So a lot of them, are they training specifically for grip? No, but when you're having to do like things outside of your body weight that are very functional in nature because you have odd objects, you are going to build your forearms. I mean, there's not a professional strongman in the world with small forearms, and very few of them actually like are doing any like what you'd classify as grip training beyond the events.
And with nutrition in prison, are they eating eggs like Cool Hand Luke? Is that what they...
Yeah, they have. Well, I mean, it's funny. You talk to a lot of guys and a lot of them have like, you know, made friends with guards and stuff that like kind of like would, you know, turn a blind eye to them getting protein powder and stuff like that. So I think there's definitely, you know, that type of deal too. If you're, you know, good socially, you might be able to get in like some extra, you know, protein bars and things like that.
Right. Well, Josh, this has been a great conversation. Where can people go to learn more about the books you've written and your work?
Sure. So you can go to my website. It's joshstrength.com. You can go to my company Instagram, Jailhouse Strong, or my Facebook is the Josh Strength Method. And if you go to my website, go to joshstrength.com and sign up for my newsletter, you get a free hill sprint program and a free 8-week deadlift program. And I should say YouTube too. We got a bunch of these tutorials and things like that on YouTube.
Fantastic. Well, Josh Bryant, thanks for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Brett. I really appreciate it.
My guest today is Josh Strength. He's the co-author of the book, Jailhouse Strong. It's available on Amazon.com. You can find out more information about his work at the website, jailhousestrong.com. Also, joshstrength.com. And you can also check out our show notes at aom.is/jailhousestrong, where you find links to resources where we can delve deeper into this topic. Well, that wraps up another edition of the AOM podcast. Check out our website at artofmanliness.com where you can find our podcast archives, as well as thousands of articles we've written over the years. Got an article on there about prisoner workouts. Go check it out. And if you'd like to enjoy ad-free episodes of the AOM podcast, you can do so on Stitcher Premium. Head over to stitcherpremium.com, sign up, use code manliness at checkout to get a free month trial. Once you're signed up, download the Stitcher app on Android or iOS, and you can start enjoying ad-free episodes of the AOM podcast. And if you haven't done so already, I'd appreciate it if you take 1 minute to give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. It helps out a lot. And if you've done that already, thank you. Please consider sharing the show with a friend or family member who you think would get something out of it. As always, thank you for the continued support. Until next time, this is Brett McKay, reminding all you listen to the AWIN podcast, but put what you've heard into action.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.